Words go unspoken. I see Tessa Leanne Snart and her sister Lois Snart has just actually said our little Christmas cake wreath. A Christmas cake wreath came in second place on the Siren FM Bake Off. So I think they deserve the additional sort of prize that we
were seeing. Yeah, yeah, we'll have to sort something out.
Brilliant show with lots of lovely baking, great guests of the fabulous Lincoln Choir. You'll be able to hear it all again probably in the next 12 hours.
It should be online, I'm sure.
It will be online from that perspective. And even our former midweek driver, Claire Margerison, has actually responded with, See, that's what happens when you have a postgraduate student at William Sitwell's former university. That's the line that
you the
writing technique has improved tremendously. And clearly, as an English graduate, clearly just writing, smiley face.
Welcome to University of Lincoln. This exactly. is the best quote we've got it so far.
Yes, precisely. Okay, what's happening in the next production? Part of the hour that will be the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, the rise of the olderpreneur. As opposed to the entrepreneur, it's never too late to have that bright idea and that genius idea coming through. And we'll be talking about the delights of Alan Stevens of Fiona Mir. Do you know who's arrived in the studio, Ben, for Christmas?
No, I don't know.
It's Eva MacDonald. Oh. Yay! Eva has arrived and returned.
And Tessa. Don't forget Tessa.
Well, of course, but
it's just that Eva's not been on for a while.
He was just giving your cakes a mention, funny enough.
And we'll continue to do so because sadly, Eva, you did not have an entry yourself into the cake off competition.
No, because I was working, as usual.
You could have submitted as Bridget Royce did in absentia. You know, you could have actually dedicated somebody else to effectively submit and put something into place with that sort of point of view. It's always a delight to see you back in the production.
Thank you.
We'll be talking about all manner of other bits and pieces. You do feature, of course, in the calendar. I don't think I've got a copy for you as yet, but we'll have to have it saved up for the new year. But Tessa can always show you because you've got your calendar.
But I've given it to my mum. She claimed it.
I have to get another one for you.
I can send you pictures of it.
Congratulations, Tessa, on coming second. Christmas wreath, so well done on that.
Yeah, that was lovely. I've just got to mention, we did have help decorating. We all sat there. Lois's friend Nicole came in to help us cut out little bits to put on top, so we wanted to give her a bit of recognition for that because she's really, really creative too. So.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. So, just shows the sort of the additional.
Good job you didn't tell the judges that last night.
No, she came in. Well, we were going to say, but obviously there wasn't time after we announced the winner. So, but we just wanted to say she came into the kitchen and sat and helped us. So, cut things.
And of course, with the classic line, should Sue Royce fall ill or unwell or be unable to carry out any of her official formal duties as official cake off champion for the 2017 period, then of course that duty falls to yourself and Lois.
Oh.
So,
it's
first runner up, as we like to say. That's the official line. First runner
up. The best cake did win, though. That was a good cake. I tried some and it was delicious.
Sue was saying earlier, and she was saying that the carrot cake was a very positive one.
Oh, okay.
Did you have a look at the images, Eva?
I saw Tessa's on Instagram, like on her Facebook, but I didn't actually see loads of them.
You haven't
seen? So I had to see the winner cake.
Well, and clearly you need to have a look at the whole sort of sequence and use those mobile phones. Probably we can do it after the news or something on that sort of basis, because after all, you know, we'll be entertaining the listeners and discussing the cake-off, because there are people out there who might think, stop it, enough already with the off-bake cake-off scenario. We've just taken it far too far from that point of view. And that might just be William Sitwell. Because he hasn't responded. I don't even know if he's going to join us on the production this morning. I know.
I wonder if he's on another bike ride. Because wasn't he on a bike ride last time?
Yeah, he was on one last week, wasn't he?
He always seems to be on a bike
ride.
Anyway, you're listening to Siren FM, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. And in about 2 minutes from now, after the Bee Gees and How Deep Is Your Love? As big as your cakes are, dear. We'll be back. When they all should let us be. Excellent to the weather today. Highs of 8 degrees centigrade, lows of 7 degrees centigrade. Pretty constant then. It's going to be rather cloudy and misty with light rain and drizzle.
Singer, scholar, festival ambassador and midweek drivette. It's Eva MacDonald on the Midweek Drive.
Roman candles are burning the night. Yeah, you are a shining light. You lit a torch in the empty night. Yeah, you are a shining light. Yeah, you light. man of my life. You've always been a thorn in the side, but to me you're a shining light. You arrive and the night is alive. Yeah, you are a shining.
Looking at ways in which we can obviously continue to experience the joy of life and work through that. We've often had lots of sage business advice saying it's never too late to actually make a start in all sorts of other areas. However, when you actually look at a world in which research shows that the over 55s are finding it increasingly difficult to make ends meet, with just over a fifth saying they need to generate extra income due to high living costs, maybe you need to think about ways of actually enhancing that, etc. And this research put together by Aldermore has a whole range of other fascinating factors, and to address them, we're delighted to be able to welcome Managing Director of Savings for Aldermore, the superlative individual whose name is Simon Healy. Good morning, Simon.
Good morning.
Simon, share with us this particular advice, the rise of the olderpreneur. Is it a case of getting beyond the sort of Del Boy and nice little earners and so on, but actually looking at how we can actually develop and generate more cash?
Very much so. So, at Aldermore, we're always looking to understand how our customers behave and what their challenges are. And of course, in recent years, we found that people are not getting the returns on their savings that they've perhaps had in the past. So what we looked at is, well, how are people responding to that? And what are they doing to address that particular problem? And it's been quite fascinating. And I think one of the things we've learned is that we really are a nation of bold go-getters. And so what you've got is a group of people here that are using a range of businesses to enhance their savings pots.
It's fascinating to find that respondents cited people like J.K. Rowling, Sir Richard Branson, Bill Gates, and indeed even Lord Sugar as inspiring in terms of achieving great things from nothing at all.
Very much so. And I think what I really liked about that list is that those that topped it, so J.K. Rowling topped that list at 33%, that they're all British. All the top inspirations are British. And these are inspiring our entrepreneurs to go out there. 49% are using car boot sales or online equivalents to sell products. We've got people making arts and craft, food and drink. We even had people selling parking spaces, which is just incredibly creative.
And looking towards that, obviously the World Wide Web has a great part to play in terms of ways in which you can sell online without necessarily sort of saying that you're an entrepreneur or indeed giving any chronologically gifted notion of your age at all.
Well, exactly. And I think what was very interesting, I think there's a lazy stereotype that says that the internet is just for the youngsters. The research proved very much the opposite, that all age groups are getting active online and you know, taking advantage of the opportunities it presents.
In terms of where does this extra income generated being spent goes, 26% spend it on holidays, 21% on household bills, and 21% actually put money back into a savings account. So I suppose there's always hope, really.
It's very encouraging, yes. I mean, I suppose what sits behind some of those stats, though, is perhaps the slightly more worrying stat that many people don't have a huge amount of money left over at the end of the month. So 13% actually said that they don't have anything left at all, and a fifth are turning to new opportunities just to make ends meet. So I think there's a range of sort of experiences behind the data.
Is it a case of thinking outside the box and actually coming up with those crazy ideas? Because clearly one of the aspects is, well, we all have a book inside of us, but will we ever get around to writing it?
I'm not sure I've got a book in me, but you never know. But yes, I mean, I think it just demonstrates the whole range of creativity that people are applying here. And I'd really encourage people to look online for inspiration, not just in terms of opportunities of things to do, but also how to go about it. And of course, you know, while you're online, take a look at your savings as well and make sure you're making the most of that.
Perhaps the silver surfers will become the golden surfers in more ways than one, actually, both in terms of experiential enhancement and indeed building up their finances too. Is there a place that you would recommend people to go to for further information? Would it be the Aldermore website, perchance?
Funny you should mention that, but yes, certainly aldermore.co.uk. Have a look at our range of savings accounts for both businesses and consumers.
And what about yourself? Are you thinking about ways in which you can, as well as being managing director of Savings for Aldermore, have you got something just in the back of your mind you think this could be a classic? I mean, you don't have to reveal what it is, but are you planning to become an Alderpreneur yourself?
I've got to be careful because I think my employers might be listening. But no, certainly alongside, I quite like the idea of upcycling. So we've got a friend who's been very successful at taking sort of different bits of crockery and creating something new out of it. And I'd quite like to have a go at that, actually.
It's being creative and indeed actually thinking outside the box. That's the balance of the two thing and keeping your portfolio stuff open. Simon, it's been fantastic touching base with a good self today. Many thanks indeed. And we wish you all the very best. Happy holidays. And who knows, maybe over the festive season, one of our listeners could actually come up with an inspirational idea and become the next Bill Gates, J.K. Rowling, or even Sir Alan Sugar.
That would be fantastic. Anyway, thanks for your time.
Bells will be me greeting once again. Choirs will be singing silent night, Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. Not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutations. Time of year to be with the one you love. So won't you tell me you'll never more roam. Christmas and New Year will find you home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief.
Tessa Snart back in the studios. Not only can we actually turn around and say there will be a rerun of Sound and Country Vision's Christmas edition taking place actually in the Midweek Drive slot next Wednesday.
That'll be great.
Wednesdays as opposed to the Midweek Drive, you will have Eva. This is important because you might turn up and you see nobody in the studio.
When is this? Next Wednesday?
This is next Wednesday.
I'm not here, I'm on holiday.
She won't even be in the country. Yeah. We'd need to listen online. Oh. And is it the Canary Islands?
It's Cuba in the Caribbean. I don't know.
Cuba
in
the Caribbean to celebrate Fidel Castro's recent demise, or sort of past.
Very nice.
Yes.
I don't know. I didn't do geography. I can't say.
Well, a couple of tips. When you go to Cuba, look out for cigars being rolled on thighs.
I've been told that a lot.
Nice. And secondly, also be a little bit careful about, obviously, the kind of the cars that they actually have there, because they're pretty much old style 1950s convertibles and things.
They are amazing cars. They look superb.
Check out the automobiles and so on.
Wow.
And just avoid any mention to the Bay of Pigs at all.
I'll do that.
It could have blown up the world. And who knows what could be happening this time around as far as global geopolitics are actually concerned. Who knows? You know, there's Prince Philip. He looks out the window on Christmas Eve. That's some reindeer, he says. The Queen replies, 63 years. Yes, that is a lot. That's some reindeer. Okay, then. William Sitwell may be with us. He may not be with us. But the good news is, as well as reminding folk that next week between 5 and 6 on Wednesday, you will have Sound and Country Vision. And then between 6 and 7, you will have the Stone Tapes.
Oh.
Yeah. Exactly. Combination.
Sam and David are great.
Precisely. Almost prepped for all sorts of other wonderful things. So you can listen to that online if you wish, either at whatever time zone you're in at Cuba in that particular area. I think it probably would be about early morning here.
I don't know the time zones.
Bless her. She knows nothing and continues to deny everything, which is very good. That's why we appreciate you. Anyway, one of the things we couldn't feature when we were doing Sound and Country Vision tests, of course, because we had such excitement with Paulina Jane.
Yes. She was doing her stuff there.
We heard the Eagles with Please Come Home for Christmas.
Yes.
But we didn't manage to actually focus on the Dolly Parton selection.
No, we didn't, did we? Yeah.
So you might like to dedicate this to the entire Snart family.
Okay, yeah, I will.
That's obviously Lena. Actually, it's not really Lena. It's Lena Jane's her performance scenario. Really,
yes.
Story, so your mum, Annie Snart.
Yes,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
it.
Your
dad, Dave, that's it. And Lois, well, she's actually in this building
somewhere. Cake maker, etc. Lois
she
has
is.
Never made a single edition of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
I know. She hasn't.
Is that
she's a little bit.
Does it say something about media, audio production students?
I think it does. I'm going to be biased towards my course. But yeah, audio production. It's just not as good, is it?
Well,
just don't get up. Just don't get up in the morning. No.
It's a strange thing. But if you apply that, you see, you might say, well, that makes public relations better because Ben consistently, regularly here.
Ben is very consistent. Yeah, he's good at his job.
John was in this morning at just after 7 o'clock. It's phenomenal. I was writing his Christmas card as he arrived.
Wow.
You know, Lord above.
That is dedication.
Rest of the people have to wait until the new year.
For volunteer as well.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't beat that.
Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers. Yes. Is that not over-egging the pudding?
I think it... No, never.
No?
No.
John, are you a Dolly Parton fan?
Yes. I'm really a bit before the Dolly Parton.
A bit before Dolly Parton.
I'm more Al
Rosemary
McCogan.
Clooney. Al McCogan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a clue who that is.
No.
Well, you know, that's what YouTube's for, really.
Exactly.
Or alternative ways of finding things out. Anyway, would you like to introduce this, Tessa?
I've completely, the song, the name of the song's gone out of my mind.
Really?
This isn't a good thing, is it?
Well, what is the season we're celebrating?
Christmas.
Okay. If you actually say what's the opposite of I, it might be...
We.
No.
Me.
You. Okay,
you?
So those are two words.
It's very early right
charades
now.
Charades on the radio. What more could you expect as it's 18 and a half minutes past 9 o'clock? So we've got Christmas, one word. You, another word. What have we got as a third word that goes in between? Sung by Dolly Parton and Kenny
Christmas
Ridge.
Christmas with you, yeah.
Not only. Not quite. Christmas with...
Out you. Oh, sad.
Christmas without you.
You know that I want you.
You know that I want you.
I need you.
I love you.
Honest, I do.
You know that I want you.
You know that I need you.
You know that I need you.
You know that I want you. And
I love you. I want you.
Smells, sounds, sights, the five senses and so on, they're all vital to our whole experience of the quality of life. And indeed, senses can make you smile again. Recent research has revealed which sensory stimulants are most likely to make you laugh or indeed cry. And also that our homes have a dramatic effect on the way we feel today. This is all carried out by research by Magnet. And to address this and really begin to explore that wondrous feeling of how the senses impact on our lives, it's a delight almost unparalleled to be able to welcome the author of the best-selling book, Sort Your Brain Out, and indeed Mice Who Sing for Sex, the legendary neuroscientist extraordinaire, Dr. Jack Lewis. How are you, Jack?
Wow, stunned, blown away by the introduction. Thank you.
Well, it's important to use the medium of sounds to ensure that people feel good about themselves, because actually these senses of sounds and the way in which we pick up sounds, whether it's kind of hugs or indeed comedies or laughter, it is quite an important way in terms of how we kind of go on in this life game.
That's absolutely right. This research by Magnet agrees with you entirely. They pulled 2,000 people up and down the length of the UK to find out, as you said, the most important sensory cues in terms of what makes us happy, or indeed things that we can reach to if we're feeling sad in order to boost our mood a little bit. And on top of those three things that you cited, which were the most popular, There are also things like the sound of the sea. 41% said that that is the most soothing sound. When it comes to smells, the smell of roast dinners, 15% said instantly makes them happy. And then also, you know, reminiscence, thinking back to a younger time is one of the most sort of powerful ways to boost mood, bizarrely. And the sense of smell has an incredible capacity to trigger memories from before the age of 10. And so 1 in 10, coincidentally, said that school dinners was particularly good at reminding them of school days. Not necessarily, you know, culinary explosion, but nonetheless, you know, fond memories of a less stressed time.
Is that at the heart of the comfort food scenario, that ultimately everything can be solved, including Brexit, if you have some jam roly poly pudding?
I think that's a wonderful idea. There is something about kitchen smells, like anything that you experience in the kitchen. It tends to be much more multi-sensory than any kind of experience you get outside of there. So you can go to the cinema and you get really sort of energizing sights and sounds, but there's no real influence of taste and aroma in that kind of setting. In the kitchen, however, your jam roly-poly being a fantastic example of something that had, well, maybe, is there a sound of cutting into a jam roly-poly? Not really. There's the sound of sizzling bacon. Yeah. the ice on the ice cream cracking as you dig into it, perhaps. Yeah. But yeah, no, there's something about it that, and also a lot of people forget, they think of the taste as being kind of primarily from the tongue. But the sense of smell is so important. Olfactory receptors, as we all know, when you have a bunged up nose, you can't really taste anything. That's because the thousands and thousands of receptors up your nostril are really important in helping us to perceive the full breadth of the experience of taste.
And in the broader sort of scope of things, looking at areas like synesthesia, kinesthesia, etc., people who kind of are slightly wired slightly differently, does that also impact in terms of the way they appreciate life?
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. I actually met a synesthete down in Brighton filming for a new series I did this year. And it was really fascinating to speak to her because she was talking about how her particular version of crossed sensesness, if you like, synesthesia essentially means crossing of the senses, is that, so take the aroma of coffee, it creates specific visual images in her mind's eye, which she can paint. So she was flicking me through some sketches and some paintings that she'd done. And the aroma of different types of coffee and the taste of different types of coffee produced different visual phenomena in her mind's eye, and she can sort of use this in her art. Another synesthete I met on that same show, it's called Secrets of the Brain, if you're interested. He had a really unusual version of synesthesia that I'd never come across before, which is, again, seeing as we're talking about kitchens, is relevant to taste. His were any sound of a word. So you could say Baker Street to him, and in his mind's eye, he'd get a very acute sense of taste. So Baker Street to him was the acrid taste, believe it or not, of hairspray. And I was dropping these words into conversation in the context of having a meal with him. And so just by mentioning certain words, I could either improve his experience of the food he was eating or ruin it because of this very strict correlation between the sounds, the identity of certain words, and then a taste that's very strongly evoked by that word.
And presumably it's also a bit of a win-win situation that if we talk about magnets and kitchens and so on, if you listen to music, receive hugs when you've actually delivered the meal, and you've watched comedy in betwixt times on a TV in your kitchen, you can actually produce great food as well.
There you go. And that's Christmas right there, right? Like what you've just described, it's a little bit of everything. All of these, this vast array of sensory cues that can boost our moods, they are all available in the kitchen and without. And the hugs part of it is really important. I think Christmas is a great time to physically embrace everyone, not just your loved ones. I think hugging neighbours should be positively encouraged because the hug is so good at releasing this very powerful neurohormone called oxytocin in the body, which is kind of known colloquially as the cuddle drug. But, you know, it doesn't just have to be family members. I think we should get over our very British kind of stiff upper lip and sort of reticence to physically embrace one another and just, you know, rejoice in the joys of oxytocin.
Jack, this could be a whole new feedback scenario that we're putting together for the 21st century. It could actually even replace God Bless Us Everyone, Free Hugs for Christmas, you know, from Dr. Jack Lewis. Amazing stuff. What's the best place to go to find out further details and so on and so forth, Jack?
So www.magnet.co.uk. You'll find everything you need to find.
Been splendid touching base with yourself. I still think that depending on the way you actually phrase sort your brain out, I still like the slightly more in your face sort your brain out. Great stuff for that.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. With the imperative.
Exactly. With the
stop messing around.
Precisely. So, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning?
Absolutely.
Okay,
always a joy, Alex. Thank you so much.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to connect with you again in 2017. Take care.
I hope so. Cheers.
Neuropsychologist Jack Lewis there, Dr. Jack Lewis, leading the way from one kitchen to...
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive morning edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
William, welcome back to the production for the last time in 2016.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, a genuine privilege and delight. We have Tessa Snart, runner-up, actually, in the bake-off or off-bake competition last night with her sister, Lois.
Yes, hello, William.
So first round.
Hello,
there.
Morning.
Yep. We have Eva McDonald, the return of after a gap of several months, who didn't enter anything because she was too busy working. But that's her way. We have Ben Lewis, who is tweeting and actually created great merriment and happiness with the entire assembled multitudes of the University of Lincoln choir when we revealed your official tweet response to your own views on the cakes, which I think, you know, Ben, would you like to share that one more time?
Yeah, well, William particularly took to the stars, didn't
particularly, because he's a star.
Rather than anything else, but
stars.
It's all in the taste. Yes. It's all in the taste.
Wouldn't touch anything else, even though Sue Rice is delighted with her prize of course, the official signed copy of Eggs or Anarchy. And indeed, even her husband
she
was very
happy. Yeah.
Because her husband said he was pleased about the subject being Lord Wolfden. Or Wolfden. Also, anyway. So, William, as you can tell, even though you weren't with us physically, so to speak, you were there in spirit.
Mm. So let's go through the cake, shall we?
Yeah.
Oh. Right, so at 11 o'clock, there's a cake with some walnuts on it.
Yes.
And a burnt sponge.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
How did that taste? Dry, oversweet, icing?
Did you have the notes from the judges at all?
No, I think...
No, I'm telling you. I'm just telling you my views right
okay.
after that one.
Okay.
Then you had some disturbing-looking little cupcakes with green icing.
That would have been Tessa's.
That was mine. That was a Christmas wreath.
Then there was some sort of cupcakes that looked like they'd been sort of put together by a panhandler.
Sue's daughter.
That was little Bridget.
Okay. Yeah. And then there were the stars with their little burnt,
yes.
You know, they'd been a bit too close to the sun.
Yeah.
Little edges of the stars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was something with marzipan that I wouldn't go anywhere near.
It wasn't marzipan.
Was that the winner?
Yeah, it was. But it apparently it wasn't marzipan. Yeah. I can't remember what it was.
Wasn't it icing?
Yeah, it was just standard icing, but it was a fruitcake, Christmas
fruitcake. Why is there a handlebar moustache on it? Or is it the top of the lady's handbag?
That was meant to be some headphones.
Yes, that was indeed meant to represent headphones.
Is that what that... Oh.
Yes. Headphones.
Yeah, headphones.
That's a lovely idea.
It obviously managed to capture the attention of both Professor Jason Whittaker and Carolyn Williams and indeed Linda Hewitt, because that was
there is a beautiful looking plate in the middle of the picture. Is that a cake made out of with my name on it? With a beautiful red border.
I mean, clearly that was a winner, but yes, you did notice that Eggs or Anarchy is sitting in there.
Oh.
And as we mentioned, there was a bit of a trauma in the Rice household only yesterday with respect to the headphones, because apparently the first attempt at getting a microphone demonstrated in that scenario looked a bit like a gentleman's genitalia, which is not good at all. So.
Oh, lovely. That's a talking point, isn't it, this morning?
And that would have shocked William even more. You know, you can't have phallic symbolism on capes. Well,
oh,
you can,
goodness.
But, you know, not for the family audience that we work with.
No.
But A.A. Gill might have actually appreciated that. And again, we did lose another another great food critic, actually. Any thoughts with respect to A.A. Gill and...
Well, the first thing I'd say is that A.A. Gill would not have appreciated it.
Right.
And he would have used... he wouldn't even bothered to have used some of his extraordinary dexterous language skills to describe that.
Yes. Yeah.
But I knew Adrian, and he was a, you know, he was a sort of a bit of a lovey in private. He called everyone darling, probably because he didn't know anyone's name or know my name. But he did have this extraordinary ability to sort of transform the way he wrote from mere language to a sort of expression of delight, of joy, of cataclysmic abuse. Of, you know, and what's amazing is that his writing, which is so sublime and dramatical, was produced by someone who was very, very dyslexic. So he would dictate his scribblings to copy takers, copy tasters, and so on, or to an assistant who would then, and then he'd have it read back to him. So it's a great message of hope to anyone there who has real literacy skills, who might be dyspraxic or dyslexic, that you can become one of the great stylists, one of the great writers of your age. And I mean, I would just say, he was a feature writer, he was a restaurant critic. I wouldn't say he was a journalist as such. There was a great journalist who died this week called Philip Knightley, who, you know, discovered the thalidomide scandal, who exposed Kim Philby, a real legend of a journalist.
Was a guest speaker at the University of Lincoln a few years ago as
Right, yeah. But Adrian was an amazing, he had this extraordinary gravitational pull towards him. He was a very absorbing person. He was fantastically literate, and he just wrote sublimely. And it's lovely to be able to, it's a great, you know what, I think with his passing, we should remember the beauty and the importance of the written word in this digital age, that we must all try and write and express ourselves through the pen, because it's the way forward, not the way backward.
You don't think Mr. Gill would have been a one for emoticons and emojis, though?
Well, he might have been, but I think, you know, he was a dyslexic wordsmith. Oh. And he would have crapped all over your filthy cakes, I tell you.
We would have won him over the choir, don't worry. We would have won him with that choir.
Remember, William, we had over 40 people singing in the studio as well, with Ed Wellman and a dinner jacket, which you can also see for that. But I will tag you into
good
it.
Lord,
it was very impressive.
Good Lord. So, I would say the one thing I disagree with Adrian Gill, where he described restaurant PRs as the headlights on civilization. Which I thought was a bit mean, because actually we love PRs, and restaurants need publicity and PRs.
Wait, you're welcome to have my help anytime.
There we are, you see. Ben, level 2 public relations student, always on the case, looking to actually develop that whole process. Excellent stuff. John, any questions that you've got for William? Because you're often listening to William's pieces.
Every Thursday I listen to you, William. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering, what would you suggest to go with a pheasant, which I might have for Christmas dinner, seeing as I'm on my own?
Well, the first thing is how you cook it. And, I mean, fine, roast it, but make sure that you don't create something that's too dry. You might just like to take the breasts off or turn it into a casserole, get a couple of pheasants. You know, I think a nice warm stew would be quite nice.
Yes.
It's one way of doing it. Otherwise, if you're just going to roast the bird, to be honest, I think you need, you know, you can have all the other Christmas trimmings, but you need to make sure there's plenty of gravy and bread sauce and so on, so that, because it can be quite a dry bird.
I usually roast it in my own dripping. I collect my own dripping from roast.
Your own personal dripping, that's what I'm talking.
It's Lincoln, you know, you can't blame us. It's what we do in the North.
We're living in the back of beyond out here, you know, William.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm learning new things every time I'm on this show.
But no, I usually cook it with my own dripping that I've prepared and wrap it in foil and let it roast away in itself with its own juices.
I think it's great. You know, I think a bit of red cabbage goes well with because that's strong enough to take on the flavours of pheasant, because pheasant is, you know, people tend to put all the stuff with a turkey because turkey hasn't got very much flavour. Pheasant has got a nice gamey flavour, and I think you should make some really nice gravy with the juices as well. Splosh a bit of red wine in there, you know, reduce down. So have a really rich port sort of gravy would be really nice.
You know, it sounded better by the minute, this, you know, William.
So slosh in all your Christmas booze into the gravy and let it reduce for a couple of hours. Right. You've got a really thick, sticky, sweet jus. And then you can drizzle it over your pheasant. And then I just think, you know, Dijon mustard, doing, perfect roast potatoes, some carrots, and a bit of red cabbage.
Great. Yes, that sounds good to me.
That's why William Sitwell
Thank you
is
very much,
the man when it comes to sage advice and various other factors. In fact, we were seriously thinking about if you're around on the Feast of the Epiphany, William, when we're next down in London, we should actually try and see you face to face once again. But yeah, that's another line entirely. He may have left the country.
Yeah, come and see me at Soho Radio, where the green room that was a coffee shop that then was going to be a vinyl factory is now a cactus shop.
Nice.
So it's very painful for my guests as they jostle to get into the studio and they get these gentle pricks.
Or should it be called a cacti shop?
Nice. Very good.
Succubus.
succulents anyway. That's where they are from that point of view. William, have you had a reasonably interesting set of telephonic links this year with us?
Yes. I mean, you know, like all life, they go up and down. This was a reasonable one.
Exactly.
At least he's honest.
So, exactly, Tessa. You know, and he liked the stars, so Hannah will be impressed with her.
They are lovely, though, them lemon biscuits.
The stars
very
were
good.
Sorted out. It's all in the taste.
Yeah, no, they should have won. They should have won, to be honest. Yeah.
Just as well Sue Rice isn't listening to the programme, otherwise she would again sort of done all sorts of things. Anyway, final question, please, Tessa.
Will you be joining us again next year on the show?
Do I have a choice? I mean, like, the only way to stop it is to get an injunction out on you guys.
Please, honestly, the spirit of Christmas, for goodness sakes, you know, William Sitwell will return. Actually, are there any William Sitwell pieces we should be looking out for over the festive period? Because I think, you know, as well as having, thank you, one of the key elements in the current edition of the Radio Times, Ben, we need to know when can William Sitwell be seen on screen, or is it a case of we have to rely on YouTube?
As in the, what, the piece I did over the summer? Yes. I'm still waiting, well, funny enough, I contacted...
The point being, William, are you on TV over Christmas that we should be checking out sort of vital parts of cookery programmes and more?
No, I think you might find me sort of the odd word coming up on them in the MasterChef final.
Nice.
Who knows? But no, you can. The big moment, of course, at Twixtmas, between Christmas and New Year, will be my food trends predictions for 2017 that will appear in the Times. That'll be the big moment. That'll make everyone's year. Everyone can then sleep soundly.
You see, Richard Fitzwilliams likes to think it's his kind of views on the New Year's honours list. It could well be Sir William. I won't say anything more, but I think, you know, that's what we're heading for. You know, knighthood, definitely. But William's food trends piece is worthy of a podcast piece just of its own and in the Times as well. So great stuff there. A round of applause for William Sitwell, please. Hurrah and huzzah.
Anyone who ever loved me and know that I love you. Anyone who ever dreamed could look at me and know I dream of you. Knowing I love you so. Anyone who had a heart would take me in his arms. Like you hurt me and be so untrue.
they have the heart and then they drizzle their pustle dripping all over it. No, I won't go there. It's just a strange William Sitwell piece. But you quite enjoyed that, did you not, John?
I did, yes.
You thought it was Cilla Black, didn't you?
I thought it was William Sitwell.
No.
It's William.
It was, of course, Leanie Jane.
Sensational singer and doing all marvellous things there, so that's great. Will she be singing over Christmas, do you think?
She is. She's singing for New Year's Eve, actually.
Splendid. Well, what better way to check out sort of some wonderful things on New Year's Eve than actually inviting Alan Stevens and Professor Fiona Moore to check out Leanie Jane as well?
Oh.
It'll be a whole new world then. Wouldn't it, Alan? Slightly bunged up Alan with a bunged up nose, but still gamely here to actually commit in the whole thing. And the ever effervescent and bright and sparky individual soul that is Professor Fiona Moore. How are you guys?
Well, we try.
Yeah.
Tunes help you breathe more easily. Oh. Whatever sweets are available.
Nice. See what you did there? Well put together. A single to Dottingham, please. Sorry, it's another sort of time from another.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
A classic.
We go back a long way.
Yeah, but still, that's time. Just an illusion. A bit like the studio was last night. You know, they won't have checked the studio. Tessa, would you like to explain for the benefit of our listener and possibly contributors like Alan and Fiona, what exactly was happening in the studios last night?
Well, it was certainly a different show last night. We had the Lincoln Choir in. There was literally 40 people in the studio roundabout last night. And we had the Christmas Siren Bake Off as well.
I'm surprised Fiona hasn't been liking the photographs, as they also featured David J. Howe with his TARDIS wearing Christmas jumper.
I think
and
that's how
Sam Stone as well
managed to fit everybody in. It was David's jumper that helped.
We basically went through David Howe's chest.
It was the thread that held you to camera.
Yes, exactly. And if that doesn't give Chris Chibnall some ideas when he's working on the new series of Doctor Who, I don't know what will, to be absolutely honest. But last week we had to cut off Fiona and Alan pretty much in midstream, as we were getting into Westworld.
And Power of the Daleks.
And Power of the Daleks, which, of course, was on screen when only John and myself were probably alive.
What? Ben, you? You're a quarter, you're a bit 20s, then, weren't you?
Yeah, fine.
1966?
Not on air.
it's just in
withheld information.
Exactly. Anyway, it has been re-released to celebrate its 50th anniversary.
Well, version of it.
Indeed. Well, there's a colour version coming out next year, so you know, it's step by step. Eventually, they'll get to live action. They'll do it all
one day. Yeah, one day they should find it.
Exactly.
Yeah, they successfully scrapped it sometime in the early 1970s. And then, as they did with a lot of stuff, which they now desperately want back because they can flog it.
Oh. So, what did you make of it? Were you happy? Did you feel that the panda that Patrick Troughton actually portrayed there, it looks just like a panda with his dark eyes, actually provide? Yeah, he does.
Have you seen it?
I have, yes. In full.
Oh, interesting, yeah. Well, on the one hand, I actually had a lot of trouble watching last year's Doctor Who. I usually try and watch episodes twice before I delete them for the Skybox, and it was an uphill grind for last season. I liked the first couple of stories, but a lot of it I found very wearing. Where is Power of the Daleks? You know, we basically zipped through it very, very fast. It was, for something from 1966, which is how long ago? 50 years ago. It had some pace to it and, was enjoyable. The animation varied. The Daleks, there seemed to be two animators working on it. The guy, not they were bad animators, but one chap appeared to have more time and more money, and the other guy didn't. And the guy who had more time and more money was doing the Daleks, and there was an extremely good animation concerning that. And the guy who didn't have the money and the time was basically animating the actors or characters, and it was a bit Captain Pugwash in certain circumstances. Would you agree, Fiona?
Yes, definitely so. Mm. And to be honest, I have to say, in defense of the character animation, I did quite like it, and I also found it better than the Reign of Terror animation. I think the problem is just that the difference in styles meant that a lot of people thought, you know, you'd see those beautiful streamlined animation of the Daleks, and then you'd go to this, slightly...
Very flat.
Yeah, slightly cheerful animation, shall we say. And, and then rather than going, oh, yeah, I know, this is all good, they were sort of going, what? Hang on. You know, got to reset my brain for this. Not working. So I feel a bit bad when I see people complaining about the animation, because I'm like, well, actually, you know, it's a lot better than you think it is. It's just that, some of it's better than the rest of it.
Yeah.
So much like life. Tessa, has that appeals to your good self in the same way as a Richard Fitzwilliams film critique. I mean, we've looked at some slides from the image there. You can see my sort of panda sort of notion of Patrick Trapp there. Annika Wills, of course, who has been on the programme. We haven't spoken to Annika about what she's made of the whole thing as yet, nor indeed listened to the DVD commentary. But does this appeal to your good self?
Yes, I think so. I mean,
bit of historical artifact there from that point of view. What we're actually seeing in the studio, in case you don't have a webcam handy, because we don't have one there, is Tessa ducking under the microphone
to have a look
at the screen. Yeah,
I should really stand and walk around. That would be the sensible
too
thing.
Too much to do.
It looks good, actually. I know my dad's been a Doctor Who fan since he was obviously a little boy. So I think...
David.
He would definitely be interested in that.
There you are. Could be a birthday present for Dave Stark.
Yes, it could, actually. Or indeed, that is a good idea because I think men are really difficult to buy for. I think
always.
Girls are just
yes, they are.
So that is a good idea.
Yeah, buy them toys and stuff like that.
Exactly. Well, at least we may. John, you're not a Doctor Who fan, are you?
I used to be. I used to be in the very first series,
right,
which was black and white, because I always wanted to know whether the sets would fall down or not. They never did, actually.
Thank you, John.
They used to wobble every now and then.
I'm going to go in there and kill this guy now, because the set thing really annoys the hell out of me, because they were no different to any other sets used by the BBC. And they,
quite right, Alan.
They
you
were
stand
held up with
there.
Still irons, yeah.
He comes in here as our events manager.
We caught a few wobbly sets on upstairs, downstairs one time.
Yeah, precisely. So, you know, John, take those wobbly sets back to Rhodesia where you're a police officer. Was it Rhodesia?
It was Northern Rhodesia.
Northern Rhodesia,
days.
Exactly. Yeah, see, they even changed the country's name.
Now.
Exactly.
Go on.
Yeah, go on.
No, I say what is a bit wobbly is the actual... script, I think. It doesn't entirely...
make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the setup is that there's a colony on... Now, it's interesting, actually, where Vulcan, the planet, is located, because in the Dalek book released in 1964, there's a map of the solar system, and Vulcan is actually located between the Sun and Mercury, isn't it, Fiona?
Yes.
You'd know better than I would.
Yeah.
Very hot.
So in that book was co-written by David Whittaker.
For any life to exist at all, really. Whereas if Vulcan was way outside the solar system, it would be. But then it'd be close to Telos and Mondas and all kind of things.
Well, the thing is, it's interesting, isn't it? It's where, you know, I mean, to actually travel to a planet, another planet, would, you know, it's funny, isn't it? Where they sort of whistle up an examiner to come and see. To sort their stuff out. And you think, oh, where is he? How far away is he?
It's a bit like a Hefke visitor. There's a Hefke sort of audit that you actually have in there.
It's a bit like I think it is a discussion, quite a long discussion online about what the influences were. And who, what did Stephen James Walker suggested? Yeah. He said it was like Rhodesia or something, wasn't he?
Actually, he thought it was based on Rhodesia, which would make sense because... Yeah.
You had John Wenham as a police officer in Northern Rhodesia at the time, so clearly that was what the Power of the Daleks was actually written for. Were there any Daleks in Rhodesia at that particular time, John?
Well, they hadn't actually got out into the bush at that time. But no doubt they found it.
Darn those crazy mutated life forms from Skaro when they come to Rhodesia via planet Vulcan as science fiction's metaphor. Honestly.
See, that's the interesting thing, because I think... I was talking about another friend of mine last night about this, and concerning the story. On the one in the very first Doctor Who story they did called An Unearthly Child, the Doctor talks about the cavemen they meet, saying that they're like children. You know, their minds switch from one minute they're your enemy, and the next minute they're your friend. They switch, like that. And he was saying it was difficult to relate to these people, and one aspect, one way of reading Paradaleks is that the colony on Vulcan, your colony on Vulcan, are just like that. You know, the rebels are unhappy with Governor Hensilver. We can't quite work out why that is. Bragan, who is head of security, wants to take over, and is happy to use the rebels, and then also betray them. And you've got all these various intrigues and plots. And as far as the Daleks are concerned, you know, they are in a position where, you know, they've landed, they're on this colony, they're in a very vulnerable position, and they basically have to act like slaves and appeal to the people's greed, because they know that, you know, as soon as they suspect that they are anything other than, you know, compliant robots, they'll be destroyed. So from the Dalek perspective, they would see the humans as being, you know, treacherous, unstable, duplicitous, and murderous, and that they basically have to get to, they have to buy time to get to a point where they can, you know, reproduce more Daleks, and when the coming battle comes between various factions in the colony, they are ready to take out both sides. And so, from that perspective, so the interesting thing is that from how the Daleks see it, it makes sense. But I don't think there is a perspective outside of a Dalek perspective, because those humans really are, you know, vicious, duplicitous, and illogical. Does that make sense?
I am your servant. Yes. I am your servant.
And they promise various things that they can provide. So, you know, what do you think about that, Fiona?
Yeah, well, I mean, as I've been saying elsewhere, the problem is that the writer hasn't really given enough thought as to how the colony would work, and so the consequently things don't really flow naturally from it. Now, as I said, you know, if you sort of take the situation, you know, you've got a planet, it's clearly hostile, there's a lot of mercury on it, well, you could easily write a setup where you know, mercury is needed on Earth or in space for some process or other. So there's a mercury mining operation, and equally, it's dangerous. Maybe it's something that has to be done by criminals or indentured servants or something. So,
Fiona, on that point, can I say let's hold it and maybe resume when we have Telefantasy and Society 2, a symposium that's scheduled for March the 19th, 2017. It's an exciting thing, and we will talk more about that as indeed dates and things evolve. Well, we've already got the dates. All sort of magical things will be happening. I am your servant. We can't talk about Westworld. We've run out of time. So, Tessa, last two questions for Fiona and Alan, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning? Well, the last one of 2016 exactly. Or this year. Yeah.
Is this the last one?
Yes.
So we can't talk about Westworld at all then.
Well, we can in 2017. Carry on.
Nah, they'd be forgotten then. They would have forgotten it. It's one of the next big thing. Oh, like class.
And will you be joining us again in 2017? Will you be coming back to the show?
Yeah.
Of course. Yes. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, our wonderful neuropsychologist, Dr. Jack Lewis, William Sitwell, Alan Stevens, Professor Fiona Moore, and of course, John Wenham, Tessa Snart, Eva MacDonald and Ben Lewis, and you, dear listener, for actually keeping us company for this, the show after the bake-off, cake-off scenario that took place last night, which I'm still surprised Fiona hasn't liked any of the photographs at all on Facebook.
I know. She's not even... Let's go and check them out on Facebook.
My feed at all.
They haven't shown up on Fiona's feed. Well,
no.
Go check out Southside Broadcasting. Yes. You'll find they're all there. It's all sorted out.
I will. Now that I know they're there, I will find them and like them.
Exactly. Have yourself a merry little Christmas with Casey Musgroves.
Yes.
Actually, we do need to say farewell. We need to say that. And what? Happy holidays. Happy Christmas.
Holidays.
After three. One, two, three.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you too.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be.